Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Good evening and welcome to Interchange, WFHB's weekly public affairs talk show. My name is Lisa Marie Napoli, and I am delighted to be your host for tonight's program. Tonight's topic here at WFHB is human health and the environment. And we have two wonderful guests, very experienced in the topic. First, we have Sheila Evans. She is Indiana University Health's Community Health Program Manager. And we also have Jackie Bowers, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Bloomington. Thanks to both of you ladies for being here this evening.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Great. So I'd like to share a few words about each of our guests, and then we'll jump into talking about human health and the environment. And we're going to do that tonight in three segments, and we'll talk about that in a moment. First, Sheila Evans, who, as I mentioned, is the program manager at IU's Health's Community Health Program. She is a parent and grandparent, which gave her particular growing interest in the area of children and their health and well-being, and she's also a state-certified lead risk inspector. She's a practitioner in Healthy Homes, which is a program we will talk more about, and as a part of the EcoHealth Child Care Program, also on the IDEM Approval Committee for Five-Star Environmental Recognition Program for Child Care Facilities and Green Classroom Trainings. I sort of pulled that all together, but you can unpackage it for us later, Sheila.
Sure.
And to my left here, I have Jackie Bauer. She's, as I mentioned, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Bloomington. She's also former director of the Indiana Rural Community Assistance Program. She is a graduate from the School of Public and Environmental Affairs here at IU many years ago now, and also a proud parent of two rescued racing greyhounds. So again, thank you both, and because of your care and concern for children and animals and human health in general and the work that you do, I'm looking forward to hearing all that you can share with us tonight. Our first segment on Interchange is going to be looking at sort of the broader issues, the national issues of human health and the environment here in our country. And then in our second segment, we'll look more toward local Bloomington, especially in the schools and homes. And then we'll close with what's going on for the future on this topic, especially in terms of individual actions and even collective group work. So moving back to the national level of what's going on in the states, maybe we could start with you, Jackie, with your perspective on sustainability. How would you describe the current state of environmental health and sustainability issues in our country?
Sure. Well, let me start just real broadly with kind of a perspective on how we use the word sustainability. And we usually use that to describe environmental, economic, and social issues and how all of those issues interact. And more people are starting to realize that, in fact, there's a lot of parallel and there's a lot of issues that we can actually bring together under the health perspective. And Sheila and I, of course, have worked together on a number of things where those areas intersect. So some good examples are where we're starting to realize that a heavily car-dependent transportation system has very real implications for health in terms of, for both children and adults, and more children are driven to school rather than walking or biking to school, and that's having some very big impacts on how those students learn as well as how their health develops. There are other intersections of sustainability with energy efficiency. In Indiana in particular, we rely entirely on coal for energy, and that, or very, very closely entirely on coal for energy, and that has some really real health implications. So trying to look at where those things intersect, I think, is something more and more people are developing a perspective on. More and more people are seeing that the where we impact health, where we fail to think carefully about the impacts on health, there are real, very real consequences for how society moves forward and how certain children and certain families are able to live and succeed.
Mm-hmm. Great. Do you find more initiatives to increase awareness about these topics that you're discussing as well?
Definitely. Yes. I think topics or discussions about health and discussions about sustainability and such as biking, for example, have for a long, long time been fairly separated. They haven't done a great job of communicating with each other. And more, certainly at a local level, but also at a national level, people are starting to make those linkages. So I think, you know, we're seeing a real improvement in how people approach these topics.
Okay, great. And Sheila, what would you like to add to that in terms of your awareness of what's happening nationally?
Well, I think environmentally, we've really made a lot of progress, but we have a long way to go. Unfortunately, the United States is not a leader in this area. But and if you look at statistics as far as how long we live and what kind of disease rate we have and illness, you know, we really don't fare that well compared to other wealthy nations. But we are making progress, and that's what I think is really important. So there's been a lot of research on environmental health in the last few decades, and that's really changing things. The medical community tends to want proven research-based evidence, but that evidence is there now. So it's really time for us to kind of get on board. And in community health, that's one of the issues that we are looking at. You know, we can't look at issues that Jackie spoke to, like obesity and heart disease and, you know, health conditions that are related to inactivity and poor health or food choices without looking at other types of toxins in the environment and what they're doing to our bodies too. And another example of what Jackie was talking about earlier is that if we can teach people how to clean their homes using natural green cleaning products, that's fewer chemicals going into the lakes and the streams and affecting our whole earth, really, you know. So with the reform of healthcare, it's time for us to start looking at more prevention. And our hospital, I'm proud to say that our hospital for the last 10 years has looked at that. I've been, you know, involved in lead poisoning prevention for 10 years now and the Healthy Homes program, which we'll talk a little bit about in a minute, but for about 8 years now. And that's all supported by IU Health. So they do see the bigger picture, although it's not really a typical approach to healthcare. So,
okay. And you had mentioned about, you know, a lot of organizations want to see the science and the research to sort of back up initiatives that they might take. It seems like when I was doing some research for the show that lead came up a lot. That seemed to be sort of the biggie, at least with homes and children and schools. So I'm wondering, is that because of the research, or could you name other issues that perhaps are at the forefront these days?
Well, yeah. I think what you talked about with lead is because it's been around for so long now. I mean, it was banned in 1978 in residential housing, but that doesn't mean that it's gone away. It's certainly still sitting in those houses and can be uncovered at any time. But we have enough research now to prove that lead causes specific types of conditions like ADHD and learning disabilities and decreased IQs. And it's hard to ignore it once we have that evidence. So there's a lot more evidence now that's come out in the last the last few decades that basically is showing those links to health conditions and environmental factors like chemicals. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these toxins that we have in our environment are poisoning our children and our pets and us. And although we may not see it immediately, we are seeing the long-term effects of some of these chemicals, like cancer rates are going up and disability rates are going up. We're getting a little better at treating cancer, mm-hmm. so we're saving more lives, but we're having more incidents of cancer, like in children, than we had 20 years ago.
And just to expand on that a little bit, the Environmental Working Group has put together this online database called Skin Deep that evaluates the presence of toxins in home or personal care products. So everything from sunblock to makeup to lotions, all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they're really starting to pinpoint what's in those products and what the impacts are on human health and the environment. So that's an example of where people are really using research-based information to expand, and the internet, to expand mm-hmm. people's understanding of how these things have an impact. So
if you go to the environmental working group and you can just, you can type in what product you're using and it'll tell you exactly what's in that product mm-hmm. and what kind of chemicals are there and whether it's safe or not. So it's a great resource. I mean, the environmental working group does a lot of research in this area, but they also are the ones that came out with the Dirty Dozen list and the Clean 15.
It's all tied,
what vegetables and fruits have the most mm-hmm. pesticides on them versus the least? And if you have limited resources, at least you can look up like which products can I buy, that are not organic, that have the least amount of toxins on them, and save yourself a little bit of money and definitely improve your health. So.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and where could people find that information? You said the Environmental Working Group, is that on that Skin Deep?
If you search on on Skin Deep, mm-hmm. you'll find that cosmetics database. And I think if you searched on the Dirty Dozen and pesticides, you would come up with that list pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. It's EWG.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great, for people if they're wanting to reference. I really appreciate how you're starting tonight's show with such a strong linkage between health and the environment. And mm-hmm. to try to separate the two doesn't make any sense.
No.
Perhaps it's a newer consciousness or whatnot, but I really appreciate hearing both of you highlight that, because it seems like a really critical point to understanding the issue and understanding that these are very interrelated mm-hmm. and not separate phenomena. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. And what do you think are the most pressing issues? I mean, obviously there's lead, and I mean, you even being able to go to the store to get a carbon monoxide test, that seems new in the past 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's radon and, just home safety in general with toxins, as well as just preventing, mishaps and unfortunate, accidents in the house with children
sure.
or pets.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure. Well, what I think is kind of interesting about that is that each individual community really has its own pressing need.
Mm-hmm.
If you live next to a Superfund site, or if you live in upstate New York, you'd be concerned about something maybe totally different than what we might be concerned about here in Indiana. They're not fracking here, but in upstate New York, people are very concerned about toxins getting in their water and, environmental contamination. Or if you're people that live in Maine or more Oklahoma, you're not concerned about as much as toxins mm-hmm. as you are. It's like, where am I going to live, mm-hmm. and where am I going to find a safe place to live? So I think each individual community has its own issues. But I one of the things that definitely concerns me about this issue or about this community is just the amount of chemicals that we're exposed to on a regular basis that we really don't even think twice about. And most of the chemicals have not really been tested on children for learning disabilities, mm-hmm. those kinds of things. So it's kind of like people seem to think that if you can buy it in the grocery store, it must be safe. And that's not necessarily true. We know that, mm-hmm. We know that, I'm very concerned about pesticides and how much we use pesticides, and we spray them everywhere. And then, pesticides are linked to terrible health conditions, including leukemia and cancer and all kinds of things. But we tend to just go ahead and use them because we don't like the little bugs, or we use herbicides because we don't like, weeds. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I think we need to get better at just embracing some of this. If it's not really causing us any harm, if it's really it comes down to a matter of looks. We talk about embracing dandelions. It's like, why do we have to kill them?
Embrace. So there's your message. Embrace,
there you go.
Dandelions. Yeah, I mean, related to that, I have a friend who, she found a cockroach, I think, in her kitchen and unloaded a whole can of Raid on it in the kitchen, So it's one of those things where I think the it's sort of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, or cutting off your nose to spite your face is perhaps
right.
the better expression. But these overreactions to minor inconveniences or minor things that are minorly disgusting in
sure.
losing sight of why those poisons, what the effect of those poisons are. But I alluded to it earlier too, in terms of pressing issues, the escalation of preventable chronic health conditions that we've seen in this country is really remarkable and really alarming, especially mm-hmm. those conditions in children. And, you know, as I also mentioned, you know, that the tie between that and inactivity, I mean, all of these mm-hmm. things are very important. This is not a matter of saying one thing is and one thing is not. But I think that trend is also extremely alarming. It's had a huge impact on health costs in this country. You know, there's this great example of a map of the United States that's shown the percent of people in each state that are obese. Mm-hmm. And over the last several decades, they keep having to push that top, the most severe color on the map keeps getting pushed.
It's amazing
when
you look at
the
years.
They keep having to push the line because the percent of people who are obese in each state keeps going up so dramatically. So whereas the top tier, you know, 10 years ago was 20%, now they've had to push it up to 30%, and it just keeps getting higher and higher and higher. And, you know, that has some very real consequences for not only the way our population can function, but for the economy as well.
Yeah, and I think to add a little bit more to that, it's not always just a personal choice. I mean, if you don't have the resources to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, organic fresh mm-hmm. fruits and vegetables, that's an issue. And, you know, we know, I mean, I think most people have probably heard about the fact that a lot of low-income housing projects are not located close to grocery stores. So where do they buy their food? Mm-hmm. Convenience stores, you know, and they're not necessarily known for a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables. Sometimes I think it is a matter of choice, but, you know, Jackie talked about this earlier, but if you don't live in a community that's conducive to walking, you're probably not going to walk, mm-hmm. you know. We're lucky in Bloomington that we have the Beeline Trail and that we have a safe community where people feel comfortable for the most part walking. But, you know, remember, I mean, I grew up, I was born in the mid-50s, but, you know, I grew up walking, biking everywhere I went. And it was kind of neat, too, because it was my freedom, mm-hmm. you know. And now I think, you know, kids sit around and maybe play indoors or video games or those kinds of things, but they're not as active, and that really does make a huge difference. But, you know, one of the things that we do at the hospital is that we offer a program called GOLD, Get On Board Active Living, and it's a program for young people that are overweight, and we partner with Parks and Recs, and we partner with other community agencies like the schools, and we have helped implemented school gardens to get kids excited about growing foods. But all those things contribute to the overall health, and it may not be immediate, but unfortunately it's going to affect our health in the long run if we don't make a difference or if we don't change.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like all of these are really critical pieces, of course, mm-hmm. to this much larger problem that we have. I think one of the latest statistics I saw about obesity in the United States was about 68%, mm-hmm. which was just, it seemed extraordinarily mm-hmm. high to me. But yeah, there, I mean, the reality is pretty scary out there. And mm-hmm. I think, like I heard you both talking, sometimes I think it requires a shift of perspective, how we see things. Can
exactly.
we live with certain things in a new way, in a different way, knowing that those benefits of doing that are going to far outweigh the negative consequences of perhaps using a fertilizer or a pesticide mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So reframing our lives and recreating them seems to be a big part of this way to improve human health and the environment.
Right.
I really think it does. And some of these chemicals are actually now being researched to see how they actually play into this whole obesity thing. Because if they affect our hormones, and many of them do, our hormone disruptors, then they're affecting the way that our body grows and can influence whether you become obese or not.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we will have more on this in a moment. We just, if you're listening, you tuned into Interchange. You just heard the voice of Sheila Evans. She's IU Health's Community Health Program Manager. And we have Jackie Bauer here with us, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Bloomington. You're listening to WFHB. Please stay tuned, and we'll be back to Interchange in a moment after this short break.
Support for WFHB comes from Curry Auto Center, Southern Indiana's largest Chevrolet dealer, and Curry Collision Center, home of Bloomington's only AAA-approved environmentally friendly auto repair. You can experience the Curry difference at curryautocenter.com. Support for WFHB also comes from the Hidden Closet Boutique at 109 East Kirkwood behind the Book Corner. You can be one of the most beautiful flowers in the garden this spring with a new dress from the Hidden Closet. New looks arriving weekly. You can find information about the Hidden Closet on Yelp.com and Facebook or by calling 345-7717.
Welcome back to Interchange, WFHB's weekly public affairs show. I'm Lisa Marie Napoli, and I'm here with Sheila Evans and Jackie Bauer talking about human health and the environment. So thanks for staying tuned in. And in our last segment, we talked about a lot of the national broader issues happening in our country around the topic of environmental health and sustainability issues, which also led into a discussion about how tightly linked the environment is, as well as economic factors, social factors, all impacting one's well-being and health. And one of the themes that came up in the first segment that I'd like to ask you a little bit more about is we touched, of course, on looking at children, and both of you had made references to animals, you know, low-income families, as well as elderly. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit more about the vulnerable population and how they are impacted, how their health is impacted through their experiences.
Sure, I'll take that one. I think I want to start with children, and I think we could probably include pets into this too if they're young. But the idea that children are more vulnerable because pound for pound they actually breathe, eat, drink more than adults do. So they're actually taking in higher doses of whatever the toxin is if they're in just an environment where they're inhaling it or ingesting it. And then, of course, a small body is going to make a larger impact on a small body, but they're also closer to the ground where toxins sometimes end up, and they do hand-mouth coordinate or hand-mouth interaction, and pets are always cleaning themselves, so I'm trying to, Jackie's the pet expert here, but I'm trying to look for that too. So children definitely, and besides the fact that their bodies are still growing and their organs are still maturing, so you know, a toxin when the brain is still developing can make a huge difference as far as learning disabilities or the way the brain is wired. So children, definitely one. The elderly, because they're frail and they have limited resources sometimes, and then also at-risk families as far as economically disadvantaged. So people that really just don't have the resources to be able to do what they need to do or to go access the doctor to find out more information. So, and you know, one of the things that's come up in this community a little bit is the homeless population. And, you know, I spend a couple days or a couple hours at Shalom Center each month. And one of the things that I've learned is that they all have very interesting stories. And they, you know, I really think that they, for the most part, people want to do the right thing, but they just don't have the resources always to do that. I heard a really interesting story from a middle-aged man that was there that was talking about how he loves to hunt for ginseng and get out in the woods, and it makes him feel better and he connects with nature, but he doesn't have a ride out to the woods, you know? Mm-hmm. So I haven't thought about that. I thought, you know, if I want to go to the woods, mm-hmm. you know, I go home, but because I live out in the woods, but you know, I can get my car and drive there and not worry about the kinds of things that someone who had limited resources would actually be worrying mm-hmm. about. So that's pretty much what I consider vulnerable population. Mm-hmm. But Jackie, do you have others that you would?
Well, I just think the vulnerable population perspective is an important way to think about the way we design our cities too. So the way we design our streets, for example, and another way we think about vulnerable populations, such as the elderly, such as children, is thinking about how they're going to get from point A to point B. So if we don't provide sidewalks, if we don't provide safe ways for them to get to school or elsewhere, we really put pressure on parents, we really put pressure on families to try to get those folks where they need to go in their cars. And so it ties to the health issue, mm-hmm. But it also ties to safety and how safe those folks feel on the streets. So I think if we can consider city planning, if we can consider how we run the city in terms of our most vulnerable populations, it really changes our perspective. I spoke mm-hmm. to an urban planner that I went to school with, who says that he always designs his streets for an 8-year-old girl on a bike.
There you go.
It just changes your perspective if you really look at it, not as someone who has the resources mm-hmm. or the ability perhaps to drive a car, but what if you want to walk to the grocery store? What if you want to walk to the doctor? How do you get those places without, if you are one of those, in one of those populations?
Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing I see is the housing issue for low-income families, that many times the houses that they end up, or the apartments that they rent, are not as well maintained as they could be if it was a more expensive apartment. And sometimes it's older, and that doesn't necessarily mean that's bad. You know, I live in a house that was built in the 50s, and we know we have lead in there, but we know where it's at, and we know, you know, that we don't have contact with it. So, you know, so it's not that you can't live in older homes. It's just that they're a little bit more work to maintain if it's an older home. So so I think that housing can be a major issue, too. Now, in Bloomington, we're actually pretty lucky in that Bloomington Housing Authority has a green team. Jackie and mm-hmm. I both sit on that. And they are really trying to make progress in this area. And all of their units have all been lead-free for years, for over 10 years. So if I have a child that has an elevated lead level and I'm doing follow-up on that child, and they live in one of the subsidized housing units, I'm pretty sure that it's not coming from there. It must be something in the house or at grandma's house or, you know, the daycare center, that kind of thing. So I think we're lucky that we have a housing authority in Bloomington that actually is concerned about environmental issues.
Yes, I really wanted to turn more locally, so this is a great place to start. Could you say more about your experience with the Bloomington Housing Authority Green Team, or what it is, the mission, or what it is that you all do with that work?
You remember, Jackie?
You know, there's been a number of things. I know that they've worked on some things as simple as providing recycling mm-hmm. facilities up for the residents up there, but they've also done a green cleaning kit, basically, for
yes.
new residents.
So and they, I do healthy homes for the couple times a year for new residents and the self-sufficiency program, too.
Mm-hmm. And they've upgraded a number of the units to
yes.
be more energy efficient, so they actually save energy. But also invested in some low tox options for mm-hmm. when they redecorate units. They try to invest in materials that are less likely to have toxins. So they're really trying to think of how do we avoid disadvantaging these families, mm-hmm. you know, further than they already are. So
and they're recycling some of the appliances and materials that comes out of the unit, mm-hmm. which is part of their grant, but you know, it's a great thing, you know, that they can, instead of just throwing those old appliances out, instead of when they're making more energy efficient, using more energy efficient appliances, they're actually making sure that the appliances get donated to the restorer so that other people can have access to them. So
great.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
they actually do a really nice job, and they've really worked hard at it for the last 10 years, so it's getting better all the time. So.
It seems like this type of work to keep up with good conditions in the house to make them safe for people's lives, it does require a lot of intentionality, mm-hmm. research, mm-hmm. you know, people to come in who are experts who could test for things and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So, and that would not be easy for, you know, the typical family with, you know, minimal resources struggling to survive from paycheck to paycheck.
Sure, so. Mm-hmm, sure. And I, you know, the other thing that I think sometimes happens is that we want to do the right thing, but we just get overwhelmed with other priorities.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, like I really believe that most people want to do the right thing. So mm-hmm. If you give them the information and you give them the time, they usually make time to do the right thing. It's just that sometimes our priorities are a little different. And, you know, if you're struggling with just wondering what you're going to put on the table for food, that's got to be a priority, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not whether it's organic or not.
Right, exactly.
Just whether there's food to feed everyone. Mm-hmm. So.
And I think that's part of the motivation behind a lot of these local initiatives is that we do want to make it as easy as possible for people to make the choices that are going to be healthiest and are going to be best for the environment and that kind of thing. Because there is a lot of intentionality, as you said, behind trying to make those choices if the information isn't presented easily to you. It really makes it a challenge, you know, and we all have to focus our attention somewhere, and with some of us it ends up somewhere else. So,
and I think, you know, the other thing is that fast food is cheap.
And quick.
Yeah.
And quick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it makes it awfully convenient for people. So, you know, if you've done any research in the obesity issue, you know that, you know, fast food is a major issue here, and we have dietitians in our department who work individually with families, and sometimes we just talk about cooking a pot of beans, and sometimes people have no idea how to start cooking a pot of beans because mm-hmm. they've either bought canned beans or they've bought it, they've bought it at a restaurant or a fast food, you know. So it's kind of interesting once you get down to the basics. A lot of this stuff I think about is stuff that my dad mm-hmm. and my mom did when they were kids, you know. You know, my dad passed away a couple of years ago, but he was 92 years old, you know, and still very, very active. And he still cooked a pot of beans every week, you know. That was, and that would last him for a couple meals, or more than two probably. But, you know, we've kind of gotten away from those basic tasks mm-hmm. like cooking. and now we've got to teach people again. And that's the thing that I find with cleaning, is that we've started using so many chemicals we don't know how to use, just mm-hmm. regular old vinegar and baking mm-hmm. soda and lemon juice to actually get things clean. And I've found that if you tell people about these things but you don't give them an opportunity to use it or practice it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting,
they won't,
you know,
necessarily. Yeah.
To clean windows, you know, vinegar and water
sure.
works like magic, but yeah. we have all these blue tinted window cleaners, you mm-hmm. know, that you can spend money on at the supermarket, and you know, it is just kind of amazing. I have trouble with weeds coming up between the cracks in my sidewalk too, and
vinegar
and water
works.
It's you know, so it is really amazing when you look at these things that, well, I could either put this on my salad or use it in place of this terribly mm-hmm. toxic chemical. It's really reassuring when you realize you can drink whatever it is you're using to get rid of the things you don't want to. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a reassurance to knowing that it's not going to be harmful for the earth
and yeah.
for the environment.
Yeah.
So it takes really more. What I've started doing is providing recipes, and I think you do some of that too, Jackie, but providing recipes, this is how you actually use the vinegar. You know, if you want to clean the tile in your bathroom, you know,
right.
or if you want to, you know, kill the weeds, but otherwise people just don't know.
Well, and that seems to be it. Like, what proportions do you use? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to mm-hmm. kind of understand it. And so how could, if someone were listening and thinking, these are really great ideas and I've started to move in this direction, but boy, I'd like to learn more. Where could they get more information?
Yeah, they could actually call me. I have handouts that I give out at the Healthy Homes program. So so they can call me at 353-5767. That's my work number. And then I do Healthy Homes presentations out in the community. And currently I'm kind of doing them more for individual groups like Bloomington Housing Authority and Crisis Pregnancy Center and BABS and different local organizations that are nonprofits that really have a clientele that they want more information. But I have a list of how to use those cleaning products and recipes, and sometimes when I go and do an event, we'll actually practice making some. Like we put together a soft scrub that people really like. That's dishwashing, yeah, liquid and baking soda that you just stir it up until it's like frosting, and then you just put it on your, like I use it on my faucets, you know, and it's a soft scrub, so you know, it doesn't leave, it's not too abrasive, but it's a little bit abrasive, so it gets a little bit of the water stains off. But you know, I just cleaned my shower this weekend and I used nothing but vinegar. Left it on for 10 minutes, sprayed it on with a bottle, left it on for 10 minutes, and then used a good scrub brush to scrub it off with some baking soda in the water that I was using to scrub it off with, and it works great, you know.
But and we've made a couple of references to healthy homes, and I think people by now could understand it's sort of an initiative to raise awareness, but could you say a little bit more about healthy homes? And
sure. Healthy Homes was actually, has been in existence for about 8 years now. And it's a combination of CDC, HUD, and the EPA that have basically created a training center and network where they train not only health professionals, but building professionals, so that we all get those principles of healthy homes. And, you know, this is not a new concept. Florence Nightingale said this in the late 1800s, but she was probably talking more about sanitation issues back then. But, you know, now most of us don't have to worry so much about sanitation. Currently, we're not worrying about it, but we do need to worry about chemicals and toxins in our environment. So basically what it is there's principles. There's the 7 principles of keeping your house healthy, and one is to keep it dry, and that's really just the basic of making sure that there's not moisture so that mold doesn't grow, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you clean up water within 48 hours, you're not going to have a mold issue, but it's the standing water that really creates the problem. So, keep it clean, and that's using natural green cleaning products instead of toxins. And then some other principles also with cleaning, like wet cleaning versus dry cleaning, so you're not just stirring the dust around, you're capturing it, those kinds of things. And keep it ventilated. And that, Jackie and I have talked about this before, you know, when we make our homes more energy efficient, that also means that if we bring toxins into the home, that we have a higher concentration of pollution inside the environment. So that's really important reason why that we need to make sure that what we're bringing in is not mm-hmm. toxic to human health. So, mm-hmm. But, you know, even opening a window for 5 minutes a day is a really healthy mm-hmm. thing to do. So,
yeah, we've talked about this before, yeah. Especially in a home where, say, there's a smoker. You know, energy efficiency could, in fact, exacerbate the problem.
Sure.
So, you know, thinking about the ventilation
right.
and that kind of thing may be a good approach, a good yeah. compromise.
And, you know, in regards to smoking, you know, what we say now is that, you know, you just don't smoke inside the house. And we're even suggesting, because of third-hand smoke, the residue that's left on products, you know, after you smoke, we're suggesting that you go back to a smoking jacket and it keeps your clothes. So when you go inside and you pick up your infant, you're not putting them on your shoulder against, clothing that's been contaminated with the toxins and tobacco smoke. So, I think so, keeping it clean, keeping it dry, keeping it ventilated, keeping it maintained properly so that you don't have cracked peeling lead paint. Keeping it pest-free is a really important one. So it's about using integrated pest management, you know, sealing all the cracks and the holes so pests don't come in. Don't give them in food and water and shelter, because that's where they're going to go.
It's a fancy word for common sense.
It is. It really is. It really is. And we're lucky our schools, our Monroe County School Corporations, actually use integrated pest management. So our kids are not being exposed to pesticides on a regular basis while they're sitting in classrooms, which is a really positive thing. So.
Great. Jackie, you have anything else to add before we take a break?
No, that's great.
Okay. Well, if you just tuned in, we're listening to Sheila Evans, IU Health's Community Health Program Manager, and Jackie Bauer, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Bloomington. And in this last segment of Interchange, we've primarily focused on the home and different populations in Bloomington and in general, and how to best respond to human health and the environment concerns and improving people's well-being and their health and their just overall goodness for the earth. So you're listening to Interchange, and we are going to take a short break, and we will be right back to wrap up our show. Thank you so much for listening.
Support for WFHB comes from Taste of India, a locally owned and operated restaurant featuring a lunch buffet open 7 days a week with a variety of vegan and vegetarian options. Taste of India is located at 316 East 4th Street next to the fire station. You can dine in or call ahead for takeout or home delivery. 333-1399.
Good evening and welcome back to Interchange. I'm Lisa Marie Napoli and I'm here at WFHB with Sheila Evans, who's IU Health's Community Health Program Manager, and Jackie Bauer, Sustainability Coordinator for the City of Bloomington. And we are in our final segment here for Interchange, and we are just finishing up a conversation about the homes and some innovative approaches that people can take in their homes using going back to the basics, such as vinegar, water, baking soda, and products such as that to clean your home and care and maintain your home in a very healthy way and save costs all the while. And we're linking this into the much bigger picture of caring for our health and the sustainability of the environment as well. I'd like to, at this point, move a little bit more into the schools, since we haven't talked about that much, and then we'll look into the future of this issue too. So I'm just kind of curious, I recently heard through WFHB that the Monroe County United Ministries child care program has been endorsed as an EcoHealth child care provider. They met requirements related to such things as non-toxic art supplies, their playground equipment was inspected, mercury, lead, no aerosol sprays, and the list goes on and on. So it's really just nice to know that there are schools in our community doing things to move in the direction of greening their environment and improving health for the people, the students in particular, and the teachers and people who are in the schools. So I'm just wondering what you are aware of, or if you could describe initiatives going on in the schools related to improving human health and the environment. And perhaps we could start with Jackie this time.
Sure. Sheila alluded to the school's integrated pest management program, and they've been considered a model across the country for their program. They were a very early adopter of that for school corporations, and that was really motivated by the impact that pesticides can have on the health of the children and their ability to become educated. So those things have a very real impact, but there's also chemical sensitivities. There's all kinds of things mm-hmm. that monthly pest treatments can induce in vulnerable populations as well as others. But the schools, we're very fortunate to have schools that are very innovative, and I've been working with them on some of their, they've invested heavily in energy efficiency. There's some nice overlap between energy efficiency and pest control. So a lot of the trying to keep pests out of the building also contribute to energy efficiency. So they've really done a great job of identifying those overlaps. So we've worked a little bit together on some of those issues, trying to share what they've learned more broadly in the community. But they've also invested pretty heavily in the health aspects of things. So looking at active transportation and trying to get students walking to school, creating opportunities for biking, all of that kind of stuff. So they're really thinking broadly, and they have to, about the ways that policies impact our next generation.
Yeah, I think we have a member of our a community health team that actually sits on the Safe Routes to School program, and part of that is also just motivating kids to walk to school or to bike to school. And we We conduct 7 bicycle rodeos in the school to get kids excited about bike riding. And we partner with Parks and Recs to do that, and we really probably couldn't do it without Parks and Recs' help. But putting bicycle helmets on kids and getting them excited about riding their bike is really a positive thing. So so we do have that opportunity to partner with them. We also partner with the schools for exercise programs and also gardening, the school gardens mm-hmm. this year. Actually, this is the second year, I think, of the school gardens. But, you know, getting kids excited about what they're growing. And I was just at Templeton the other day, and there was a 5th grade class, and they were all telling me that they had grown salad, and they had made a big salad they were very excited about. And I thought, wow, that's exciting to me that kids are excited about mm-hmm. growing their own food. So
especially salad.
Yes, yeah. So the schools are, I think, do a really nice job. The program that you talked about earlier, that MACM United or Monroe County United Ministries Daycare Center is part of, is a national program. The eco-friendly daycare program is a national program that's sponsored by the Children's Environmental Health Network, and any daycare can apply for it, and then you can get online, and then you can pick a daycare center that has met the expectations of the environmental checklist, which is actually really very positive. Also, Indiana does its own program called it's sponsored by Indiana Department of Environmental Management. It's called the 5-Star Program. And many of our daycare centers in Bloomington are actually members of that 5-Star Environmental Recognition Program. And they have the same kinds of, it's similar. There's several things that overlap with the national eco-friendly daycare program. But IDEM's program actually does require an inspection and every couple years, and so it kind of holds you to what you're supposed to be doing. And the IU daycare centers are a part of that, but you know, several other daycare centers are trying for that. And I know because I've been contacted about lead testing, because that's one of the requirements, is that they've made sure that their environment is lead safe. So I think, you know, in this community there's a lot going on. But, you know, I've always considered this community a little bit more progressive. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of, you know, IU brings a lot of educated people to this community. And, you know, it requires that we offer and provide for them information. And we talked about this earlier, but just one of the things I figured out with people in general is that you can't take something away without replacing something. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the natural cleaning products, like you can't say don't use those chemicals unless you give them ways that they can use natural products. And with air fresheners are really bad for our, artificial air fresheners are really bad for our health and respiratory systems, but people love their air fresheners. So we've come up with you know, natural air fresheners that you can use essential oils, and people love it. It's like, you know, if I go to a craft or I go to a health fair and I leave, I provide people with a sample. They go home and they'll, you know, sometimes I'll even get feedback later. Like, I love that. Now I change it from, you know, lavender to whatever other essential oil they want to use. And so I do have a list of safe essential oils that people can use for natural air fresheners. If they're interested, they can call me at work. So, and you can reach me by just calling Bloomington Hospital or IU Health Bloomington Hospital and asking for me. But I've given you my number before, so do you want me to give it again?
Sure, one more okay. time. And your name is Sheila Evans, just right. to let people know if they tuned in late.
Yeah, Sheila Evans, and it's 353-5767.
Okay, great. And so there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of, you know, Bloomington residents who care deeply about these issues, and it's really nice to hear about what's going on in the schools. I don't know if you'd like to say more, or I'm kind of curious too, Jackie, I know you're helping to lead the initiative with Imagine Bloomington to get residents' feedback about how they want to see the future of Bloomington, you know, at its best, imagining it.
That's
right. So I'm wondering if you could say more about that and how that ties into issues about human health and the environment. What are Bloomington citizens saying about these topics that we've been talking about tonight?
Well, so this is a process I've been working on with the city planning department, and the idea is to develop a comprehensive plan that's going to guide the city's development over the next 20 years. And we have heard a lot from residents about
a whole range of issues. We have got lots and lots of comments about transportation issues, so wanting to provide for multiple modes of transportation, health issues, energy, a lot of interest in energy, renewable energy, and local food was a really, really big topic. So we've gotten very general guidance so far on all of those issues being important pieces of what our future should look like. We're right now in the process of working with a steering committee to develop some specific goals within those topic areas. We're going to be publicizing those over the next few months. We're working right now with the environment section, so we're going to be proposing some draft goals, and we'll be asking the public to give us feedback on those. So there'll be a very real opportunity for people to comment on what they want the city to accomplish, what they think are the big concerns, and whether those goals that we propose are capturing those concerns or not. So we really do want to hear from people, and it makes a big difference in how we plan the future of the community. So I really encourage people to look at that type of information. If you look up Imagine Bloomington, that's online on the city website, if it's just bloomington.in.gov/imagine-bloomington, all one word. There's all kinds of information on there, and of course I'm happy to provide more information at 349-3837. So feel free to call me as well if you'd like to get a little bit more information about how to participate.
Okay, and you're hearing Jackie Bauer speaking. It's nice to hear. It sounds like I heard local foods, transportation, issues.
Energy, yeah, sure. Energy, yep, yeah. Lots of different issues that we've heard about.
Good, good. Well, we'll see what kinds of decisions can be made as a result of these priorities. That's really nice to hear. So I know there are a number of groups nationally as well as locally. I mean, you already told us about Bloomington Housing Authority and the Green Team that you're on. I know that there are a lot of different groups doing similar initiatives to help improve this issue of human health and the environment. I wondered if you wanted to mention some that people might be interested in. I'm looking at Sheila to maybe start, and either sure. at the national level or locally.
Okay, sure. We've talked about some of the groups already, like the Children's Environmental Health Network, and also what was the other one that we mentioned? Oh, Environmental Working Group. Okay, so and they're kind of national, but you know, worldwide. You know, we have to recognize, you know, the World Health Organization for all the work that they've done. And but I think, you know, one of the things that is really important is that we have these larger groups that can advocate for us. And we can do what we, you know, we can do things on our level, like in our homes, to improve our health and well-being of our families. But, you know, somebody needs to be advocating locally for changes. Like, we're still operating on the 1976 Toxic Substance Control Act. It hasn't been revised since then, and there's a lot of new chemicals that are out there. So, you know, mm-hmm. that right now is being looked at, and the Children's Environmental Health Network is one of the organizations that's trying to advocate for that. So, so there are national groups. I also want to mention IKE, Improving Kids' Environment, which is a state organization, and they just recently came out with a report on the status of the environmental health of children in Indiana. And it's pretty eye-opening. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, you might Google IKE, I-K-E, which stands for Improving Kids' Environment, and they're a group out of the Indianapolis that covers environmental issues statewide. So, and they are the ones that sponsor an annual conference each year that used to be called the Lead Safe Conference, and now it's called the Healthy Homes Conference. And they bring in daycare providers and health professionals and building people, and they try to educate them all about this issue of healthy housing. So those are the ones that I kind of wanted to mention. But I do want to mention one other thing. There is a group called the Catholic Health Association that's out right now looking at, they've just issued a draft looking at the issue of how hospitals tie into communities and this whole work with environmental health. And it was, I just finished reading that, and it was, I was really happy to know that we're actually doing some of the things that they're advocating, you know, as far as working with other local mm-hmm. groups. So, but mm-hmm. hospitals can play an important role in prevention work, so especially through their community health departments. So.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And there's a whole range of groups that advocate from all different angles. One other state level group I wanted to mention was the Hoosier Environmental Council. Mm-hmm. I think they do a really good job of keeping people aware of state level initiatives, including legislation. So they're a really great resource, and I certainly refer to them often to try to keep track of what's happening in our own state. But of course, there's lots of national level groups, many of which Sheila mentioned. But depending on what particular topic really interests you, you can get involved at any level. The League of American Bicyclists is the organization that certifies the city in terms of bike friendliness. There's the Association of pedestrian and bicycle advocates, I should know that. I should have looked at the exact name of that one. But there are national organizations like that. If renewable energy is your thing, a local organization is the Southern Indiana Renewable Energy Network. Mm-hmm. So there's just lots and lots of different resources out there. And I certainly encourage people to look around and I think Sheila or I would both be very happy to try to connect you to others in the community that are interested in those topics, or any that we didn't touch on.
Great. Yes, and there are many topics I'm sure we could go on with. We've come to the end of our show. We have about a minute left. I wonder if you wanted to take 10 seconds each to share any closing words about human health and the environment, then we can wrap up on that note. So, Sheila, you want to share anything?
Sure, I'll jump in. I think one of the things that I kind of hoped that we would maybe touch on that we didn't touch on was the whole issue of global warming, but really all these things affect, being energy efficient and, watching what kind of chemicals we put into the environment, all of that really does make a difference as far as global warming. But, on a bigger perspective, wow, we really need to do some work, yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks for doing what you do and getting us started.
So. Well, thank you.
Great. So that's Sheila Evans now and Jackie Bauer.
Yeah, it is. It's so hard. There's so many topics and so many issues, but there's so many angles to approach them from. And so I think people just have to kind of find where they want to focus their attention. But I think living intentionally, embracing dandelions. I love that as a closing statement. But yeah, I think anybody can contribute in some way, and so it's just a matter of finding what that way is.
Great. Yeah. Well, thanks to both of you so much. And I'm sorry we don't have time for
that's
more.
Fine.
We need to get moving, but maybe we'll come back another time and continue the conversation because the hour went by way too fast. So thanks if you've tuned in or been listening. Thank you so much. You're listening to Interchange WFHB's weekly public affairs show. I'm Lisa Marie Napoli. I'm glad to be your host for this evening. The theme music is by Jamil Effiam. Executive director is Allison Bektesh. And thank you to Louis Malone, engineer for tonight. Take care. Have a great week. And tune back into Interchange next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Have a great week.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.